It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 239, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. After the elation of the Arizona win, expectations have come crashing down to earth after the loss to Cal. Matt and I discuss whether this year's BYU team is better than the 2017 squad, especially on offense. Because we have to, we discuss whether it's time to bench Tanner Mangum for freshman Zach Wilson. Also on the show, wearing BYU socks, BYU women's volleyball is the best in the land, and dropped passes. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. You can find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. You can listen to us right now. All right, Matt, do you ever wear BYU stuff to, say, work or maybe just around the neighborhood?
I definitely wear BYU gear around the neighborhood when I'm out and about, out on the town. I will infrequently wear BYU gear to work.
Johnny Ashton is going to open us up with the TweetBag question.
TweetBag.
And he did so on Facebook. You can do that on Facebook, fair listener, at facebook.com/riseandshout.
Did you just say fair listener?
Yeah. Don't you think they're fair listeners?
Like 1954?
Do you not like our listeners?
Good afternoon, fair listeners.
Do you have something against our listeners? Wow.
Something against weird Oof. Phrases.
Something against your face. All right. What was I going to say now? Totally lost my train of thought here. Thanks, bud. I'm trying to compliment the listeners and get things going.
Sorry. I'll back off.
Yeah. Yeah. So Johnny on Facebook said, Johnny Ashton, how often do you wear Cougar gear to work? Is blatant, e.g. t-shirt, or subtle, e.g. socks? Any advice for appropriately wearing it in an office setting? I have a BYU polo that I do wear in an office setting. My BYU socks are a staple of my sock rotation. I don't wear t-shirts because it's just not something I can get away with in my particular office situation.
Yeah, I'm in kind of a similar deal. I actually don't own a pair of BYU socks, but I'm going to probably log on to BYUstore.com and get after that right now.
So we talked about my white shirt thing, right, last week? The whiteout? Or was that a few weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago.
So I decided to suck it up and go buy a white shirt for Saturday's game. Got there early, went to the bookstore to get one. There wasn't a single white t-shirt anywhere near my size in the entire store.
Oh, I thought you were just saying that. I didn't know that was real. I thought that was just your excuse.
No, I went. I looked. I was going to buy one. I was going to buy a game day tee that was white. There wasn't a single one, so then I looked for other t-shirts that were white. Couldn't find one. It was crazy, man. That place looked like the apocalypse was coming, and apparently white t-shirts would fend off the zombies or something. I don't know. That was a weird analogy. That didn't work.
It was a weird analogy. Don't edit it out, though. It was pure gold.
But anyway, so the other thing is, the week before the Arizona game, I wore a BYU t-shirt every day. Because when I'm not traveling, I work from home, so I can, wear a t-shirt. And usually no pants. Pants optional. Pants optional, Matt. All right, let's go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
He's still caught up on pants optional.
Pants optional, that's great.
So, Matt, the BYU women's volleyball team is ranked number one in all of the land.
That is awesome.
Yes. Yes, it is pretty awesome. They host number 24 Utah on Thursday, and we're recording this on Tuesday night, and then they travel to play Weber State, unranked Weber State, on Saturday. I believe there's something like 61-0 all time against Weber State, or something. I made up the number, but it's basically
It's a lot and a little.
And Utah, they've been fairly dominant, but Utah has a decent squad this year, so that should be an interesting matchup against the Utes. Matt, let's go to the NFL with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
The Cleveland Browns select sadness.
Select a tie.
Yeah, select a tie. Yeah, yeah.
I got a text from my son today saying, When was the last time the Browns were undefeated? Has this happened in my lifetime?
No. No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't.
I don't know that it has.
Young sir. Taysom Hill handed the ball off and made the right read for a touchdown. Good job.
But didn't Taysom. We all kind of want him to make the wrong read?
And just take it in himself?
And just keep it.
I think if he wants to keep his job, it's good if he does what's the right thing.
Yeah, but is he going to keep his job?
Yeah, he is. He's going to be there all year. You know, the Packers kind of wish he might still be around.
Hello.
I mean, seriously, their backup is DeShone Kizer.
I don't even know who he is.
He was terrible for the Browns as a backup. I don't understand. Like, it boggles the mind. It boggles the mind. And it looks like Rodgers may be out for a while. I mean, he played and had that awesome comeback. But Fred Warner had a great debut for the 49ers. So good job, Fred Warner.
Killing it.
Killing it. And, you know, a few other things. Ziggy got hurt, right? Isn't that what I read?
Yeah, I didn't see him.
He had a sack in his first game. So, you know, we'll update the NFLers as we go along. Matt, before we go on with the rest of today, I wanted to let the listeners know that my first ever book, Pete Crosser, is on sale for the next 2 weeks for 99 cents. 99 cents, man.
It's a screaming deal.
What's your excuse now for not getting... Not you, personally. You already own the book. But,
I actually already have the book.
Yeah. But anybody else, if you're interested at all in fantasy, or heck, if you just want to give me a buck, you can do that too.
You just want to give Adam a dollar. That's I got right. A dollar for you.
That's right. That's right. That'll cost
it's
accessible.
No, I think the word... What's the word you use? Approachable? I always think of it as accessible fantasy,
accessible.
Right?
Accessible. Yeah. Yeah, it's not crazy. It's not Tolkien, you know. I don't talk about fair listeners in the book. So,
but it sounds like maybe you should. But, it sounds like a phrase that should be used somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the main character, his name is Zornan, and he is framed for murder and is flying across the empire on his giant hawk, trying to clear his name. And his wife is back at home trying to do the same. So go check it out. Cool magic, cool fun. You can find it in the show notes. You can go to Amazon and search Pete Crosser, or you can go to adamjmangum.com/books, and you can find it there. 99 cents, Matt. That's not a lot of dough. So let's talk about the game against Cal, Matt. And I want to start with this Jeremy Ashton email. And if you want to email us, to be part of the tweet bag, you can do that at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Jeremy says, is it just me or did the loss on Saturday feel a lot worse than losing by just 3 points? Our offense really did not look good at all in the second half until that very last drive. Is Arizona just not that good this year, or is Cal a lot better than expected? What are the percent chances that our offense doesn't cross the 50-yard line this Saturday at Wisconsin? We'll get to that last piece during the Wisconsin preview. But, Matt, what I really wanted to focus on was why does it feel, and I think probably most of us feel like Jeremy does, that this was worse than a 3-point loss?
I think sometimes it's the way you lose, I guess, is what gets to people.
In the end, does losing by one and losing by 10, do you feel that much better? Not unless you're playing against a great team, right? Like, Cal's not a great team, so losing sucks no matter what the score is, because yeah, Cal's not great.
I think it's the difference between having points in the game where you feel like you have a chance and not.
Well, I thought we had a chance most of the game. I mean, fourth quarter after that bomb, it didn't look as good. But I thought they were in it most of the game. The problem is just the ineptitude of the offense, right? It's just when you get a big turnover and then it's three and out, it's not happy, right? Or they get a big stop, the defense does, the offense gets the ball back, and what do you know, another three and out. That's not a fun way to lose, especially after watching such offense ineptitude all last season.
And I think, you know, if you watch enough football, you understand that a team that can create turnovers but not convert them into points is kind of doomed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you will lose. That is a great way to lose football games.
Yes, it is a great way to lose football games. It is, you know, yeah, we'll get to all that here in a second. But the question about Arizona and Cal, I think the answer is Arizona is worse than we believe they were, and Cal Fact. Is a little bit better than we thought they were.
Probably true.
Okay. I mean, if you look at the Massey ratings, you know, you can see the preseason for Arizona was 51, I'm sorry. And a lot of prognosticators had them as a top 40 team even, right? And last year they were ranked 56 in that rating system. They are, after these two losses, they're 87th in the country. Okay.
Mm.
Okay, so that is much worse than what we thought. Cal last year was 67th. Preseason was 58th, which was about where everybody kind of thought they were, and they're at about 51 with those ratings. They have, I think, quality wins, you know, on the road against us and against North Carolina. They're not great wins, obviously, but they're good. And their defense, if you looked at the advanced statistics on footballoutsiders.com, their defense has looked really good. Now, those advanced statistics are wonky until about week 4. Right, because there's just not enough games in the system to really compare whose schedule is better than whose, right? So that may change. But the point is, I thought Cal's defense looked quite good, especially their defensive front.
Well, and that Weaver guy was all over the place.
Everywhere. He was everywhere. He was a one-man wrecking crew. And I think Cal's defense was pretty good. I think their offense is mediocre or worse. But I think their defense may end up being a top 25 defense this year based on what we saw on Saturday and what they did against North Carolina the week before. And so that's why I think this game may not be as bad as people think it was, right? Because if you had told people ahead of time that they had a top 25 defense, would you have thought we were going to win?
Probably not.
Probably not. And a month ago, we just wanted them to split out of these first two games, right?
Yep.
Isn't that what we wanted? Let's get to the next question, which is on the same thing. Dave Broderick on Facebook says, I thought Arizona was good and Cal was bad. My theory is that both are bad and will be fasting for bowl eligibility by the end of November. Dave, it depends on what you mean by bad. 87th in the country, if that's really what Arizona is, which it, based on their first two games, looks likely, then yes, that's bad. Cal's not bad. They weren't bad last year, and they seem to be a little bit better, so they're mediocre to good. So Cal's not bad. I don't know why people think they're terrible. They're not terrible. They were way better than us last year, right?
And they were a little bit better than us this year.
Todd on Twitter, and on Twitter you can reach us at twitter.com/riseandshout or at BYU_riseandshout, I should say. So did we basically learn last Saturday that both Arizona and BYU are terrible? Going to the game this Saturday and half my family wants to wear Wisconsin gear, #tweetbag #climbonin. Don't let them do that. Don't let them do it, Todd. Wear your blue, or is it white?
And even if they
week?
Do, don't give in. Don't give in.
Don't give in. Don't give in. Don't do it.
We don't cheer for this team because they're good all the time.
BYU, guys, BYU is better than last year. The advanced statistics show it. The eye test show it. I know everyone's down because of this loss, and we were really hoping for 2-0. But let's chill out a little bit here.
And let's remember, last year was historically bad, right? So we will be to say that we're better than we were last year. It's not like let me put words in your mouth, but I don't think you're saying we're a 9 or 10 win team.
I don't think we're an 8 win team, and we thought maybe last week we could be based on, you know, but again, that's the problem with the first couple weeks of the season. We don't know how good these opponents are, right? If you had told me Utah looks really good, for example, right? Like, so at the beginning of the year and the preseason, I thought we had a chance against Utah because I didn't think they were going to be as good as they've been so far, right? But the flip side to this is, what if Arizona goes on a tear for the rest of the year? That win will look better. What if Cal is one of the better teams in their division, in the Pac-12? Well, that loss will feel better, right? Later on in the year, doesn't feel so great now. So I think we overreact.
We probably overreacted to both games, right? Yeah, but we're overreacting. I feel like I'm level set back to basically where I was 3 weeks ago. This is a 6 or 7 win team.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the fair way to look at it. The schedule, we'll get to that at the later in the show. The schedule has become more complicated in some ways, and we'll get to that. So we'll predict the rest of the year. So Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter, says, BYU's O-line gets pushed around by Cal's D. I think that was factual. They can't establish the run. Clearly, that was the case. BYU receivers drop multiple easy passes. Also true. BYU can't take advantage of turnover opportunities, just like you said. And, of course, except for Gunwalaku's touchdown. And no sense of urgency until the final few minutes when BYU actually scores. This is where I'm going to stop. That's not a fact. I don't know what sense of urgency means, right? Urgency, typically people equate that to success, right? I have no evidence that the team wasn't trying to score or didn't think scoring was important, right? Am I overreacting to his comment? But before it was all facts, that's not a fact. Cal's D stepped back and let Mangum have a bunch of short passes on that last drive because they wanted to make them chew up all the clock, which worked, right? He chewed up almost all the clock. So I don't know that it was a sense of urgency. I think Cal's defense gave them a lot of room on that last touchdown drive.
Well, and I think people are looking for certain things, right? When they talk about a sense of urgency, I think people are looking for no huddle offense and those types of things. And until that, you know, that last, until that last scoring drive, when you look at, you know, our possessions and what we were doing with the football, we weren't down 2-3 scores, right? You were down by 10, you were down by, you're down by 10 isn't, you know, depending on how much time is left, but with that last possession, you saw them do some different things with some no huddle and some other, you know, some of those things, because they were at the point in time in the game where that was what you needed to do. Before that, it's not like you were getting absolutely blown out, right? You were still right. Competitive. You had just struggled. You just struggled to score. Going faster, running that stuff quicker, isn't necessarily going to solve your problem. And so you're only going to do that when you're really up against the wall. You got to try and keep it together for as long as you can. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of what I felt like watching the game, right? Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating because you want them to get in and score. You want them to start closing the gap. You want them to get closer so that you can calm down and say, okay, look, all right, we're going to be okay. We're inside of a score here. We're only down by 3 or whatever it is. It's going to make you feel better. They're playing the long game.
Well, I'm picking on Andre a little bit, but let's not, and I say this every year, let's not equate subjective measurements about emotion to the play of the players, right? Because that's like a sportscaster narrative that's, to me, a bunch of garbage. You don't know what's going on inside these players' heads, right? Unless there's some clear indication, I always leave it as they made the play or they didn't, not the why they didn't make the play inside of their psyche, right? Or the coach's psyche, even, right? Now, he also says, who carries the most of the responsibility for the loss, coaches or players? Both equally. I say this every year till I'm blue in the face. The coaches at the college level deserve most of the credit and most of the blame. Do you disagree?
I think it's probably more shared than you think it is. But
okay.
I think that
Boise State, the coaches, for the last 25 years, 20 years, 25 is too long, 15, 20 years. Alabama, Lavelle Edwards Cougars, terrible coaches that then a year later they have a great a good coach, and all of a sudden the team's good. To me, college coaching, college football is a coach's thing. Yeah, you've got to have the talent and all that. I get that, and players have to make the plays.
And players have to make the plays, and good coaches attract better talent. So, I mean, like, if we had the players, if you put the athletes that Alabama has, okay, and they woke up and tomorrow we just it was like Parent Trap or whatever Freaky Friday, and Kalani Sitake and Nick Saban switched bodies, right? But like, you put Kalani's mind inside of Nick Saban, okay? This actually, I think, would be a great movie. This needs to be. But if you did that, I think that Alabama would have just as good a chance. Well, okay, let's. I guess that's not really making my case, because I don't want to pin it all on the players. But I think that a Kalani Sitake coached Alabama team does better than a Kalani Sitake coached BYU team, just because of the level of talent.
You put Nick Saban and his staff in charge of BYU, and give him a full off season. It's a top 25 team based on this roster today. Agree or disagree?
I don't buy that.
The recruiting ratings are around the 50s, right? I think you put elite coaches in here and you get a much better output. I mean, heck, we had a top 25 team with Bronco, and talent wise, we didn't have a top 25 talented roster, right? I mean, based on recruiting rankings and most objective outside observers. I get it. The players made a bunch of mistakes in this game, so people want the players to be as responsible. The problem is the players don't make the play calls. The players don't decide who plays. And the players don't, in the end, make any of the strategic decisions that happen on the field, or very few of them. So I have a hard time doing it equally. In almost any sport, but certainly in college football, I have a really hard time doing it equally. I just think the coaches make so many of the important decisions. Going forward on fourth down, running that play with Hodge, which he references, which was a stupid play to run.
It was not the right decision.
No huddle and run the same play with Hodge that didn't work the play before. I mean,
because I didn't see anything on the play before that indicated to me that play was there.
You slow that down, and you make the other thing. But the flip side of that is Mangum, a senior quarterback, missed a chance for a touchdown when Colley's standing out there by himself. I don't know if you guys could see that on TV. But there was that play where they got up there and ran the ball, and Colley is standing, and there's nobody within 15 yards of Colley. They missed him, the Cal defense. Could you guys see that on TV?
I didn't see that.
Third and short or fourth and short. And all Mangum had to do, an aware senior quarterback, should have always take a look and see what his coverage is, even though it was a run play called. Right?
Because he's got any position to audible that. But see, that's part of my point. Like, the coaches might make a bonehead decision in that case, right? Which I think they did on that play call. But like, you can't tell me Mangum doesn't have the latitude to audible out of that and throw the ball out to Colley.
Oh, he does. Oh, for sure. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying the players are like not responsible at all. I'm just saying I don't think it's equal. I think when they lose, it's mostly on the coaches. I think this was mostly on the coaches. I think their fourth down calls were very questionable, right? Especially with our lack of success running the football. I don't know if I would have run the ball on those plays, because we couldn't get past the line of scrimmage.
And what we did learn at least in the second half, a little bit more so than in the first half, was with the short passing game was there. Yes. They were going to give that to you. Because their whole defensive scheme was, we're going to shut down. It's almost kind of like what we talked about BYU doing to Tate last week. Is they said to the BYU offense, they said, we're going to shut down your run game, and we're going to make Tanner Mangum beat us by throwing the ball further than 20 yards.
Or at least further than 10.
Right.
Right? That you're going to have to, yes, that's exactly what they did, and that's what shut us down.
And
so let's
worked.
Talk about the offense. Katie Everett in an email, and then Joel Everett, are they related?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but we got emails from both of them. Katie says, love the podcast. What needs to happen to get the offense to stop stalling on drives? And then Joel says, through the first two games, do you think the offense is better, worse, or the same compared to last year? What about the defense, better, worse, or the same? Joel, we'll get to the defense here in a little bit, but let's talk about the offense here for a second. Katie asks about stalling drives. Joel asks about worse, better, or the same as last year. The stalling drives thing, to me, stalling drives just means we're not making enough plays, right? What that really means is we're not getting enough. We're not getting enough yards per play, right? You're just not doing it. And we certainly did not on Saturday get enough yards per play. I mean, we averaged less than 4 yards per play, and even worse than that in the second half.
And I think that one of the ways to diagnose or one of the signs of an offense that stalls out is third down conversions, right?
Oh, yeah.
What's your percentage there? And right now through this week of the season, BYU is tied at 117th place for their third down conversion rate.
Well, that's because it goes to what you said, right?
Oh, no, they're 84th. They're 84th.
But it goes to what you just said about if I were playing BYU in the next few weeks, on a third down, I am going to, if it's third and less than four, I am going to stack the box and just assume that Tanner can't beat us and play press coverage. That's what I'm going to do. Because I'm not going to let Squally or whoever the running back is do it, right, if I can prevent it. So is the offense better, worse, or the same? By all advanced metrics, traditional metrics, the offense is better than last year. I think
well, and even some not complicated metrics, right? I mean, just look at number of points scored in the game.
Oh, yeah.
We beat our average in both games this year against, and if you compare, total level of competition that we've played at this point, now Arizona might not be who we thought they were. Okay, maybe they are somewhere like ranked 80th. But if you look at the composite of your whole schedule from last year and kind of weighted average all of these teams out, right, you're going to get something worse than the two teams we've played so far. Or at least defensively, you're going to get something worse than the two teams you've played so far, and you've already outscored that.
Yeah.
That's a very simple way to look at it. But I agree with you that that offense is better than they were last year. What's frustrating is people can't recognize that because everybody's just still so frustrated.
Well, they're better. They're still terrible. That's the problem, right? They're not historically terrible anymore, right? The game against Arizona was the best offensive, was better, I believe, than any offensive game we played all of last season. Not necessarily statistically, because like UNLV, we had more yards per play, right? I get that. Arizona's not good, but they're not UNLV bad, right? And so you had a good offensive game last week, okay? Or at least average, maybe good. Is too much
was,
of a...
But it was serviceable, right? Like, it was palatable.
Yes. The Cal game was terrible. Less than 4 yards per carry. Couldn't get anything going on the ground. Obviously, the passing game was even worse. And people will say, no, the passing game had more yards per play. Well, it's a passing game. It should have more yards per play, right? It should have a lot more yards per play because you're throwing the ball, right, away from the line of scrimmage. And even by
getting, 10 yards per attempt or whatever the number is we're at right now, right, our passing efficiency through two games is among the worst in the country.
Yeah,
but
Tanner's rated like 90th or so by ESPN's QBR rating, which is really, that's not good.
Right.
It's not good.
So we're not great, but we're better than we were a year ago. We were so bad last year.
We were so bad, but we're still not good. We're still not good. Justin Sweeney says this.
Sweeney.
At Justin D. Sweeney. I equally place blame on Tanner, the O-line, wide receiver drops, and game plan for the loss. Do you think there's too much negative focus on Tanner? Still very likely to end the month 2-3, which is what we all thought from day one anyway. Wilson should play a bit, but Tanner is the right guy. #tweetbag. And he says he loved Hodge. Andre doesn't. I just thought they put Hodge not in the right position in those games. I think Hodge will be fine as a running back. We're talking about a guy that became a running back like a month ago. Okay,
so. You don't bring in a guy, first game back off an injury, first game playing in a new position, bring him in mid-series cold off the bench, and ask him to convert a first down for you when your third down conversion percentage has been terrible in both of the games you've played this year. You bring him in with cold legs, you hand him the ball on a suspect play call, two plays in a row on third and fourth down, and expect him to convert that. It's not reasonable, and it was a silly decision, and I don't understand it. And it's unfortunate for Bo because it taints the way that we view him as a running back.
Yeah, he's better than that.
They put him in a bad spot.
So let's focus on Mangum here for a second. Brian Taylor says, does Mangum really give us the best chance for success? He's a pedestrian QB at best. Not trying to beat Mangum down, but he simply doesn't have it to lead this offense. Scoring 11 points at home is pathetic. It's not good. It wasn't like Cal will end up being any good by the end of the season anyway. That part, Brian, I don't know if it's true or not. Right? We'll see. I based on their defense, they might actually be okay this year.
And what is any good, right? Is that a top 25 team? Is that a top 50 team? That's probably a top 50 team.
They may be a top 50 team. And if they're a top 50 team, then this loss looks different, right, than if they're only top 75, right, by the end of the year. But Brian's point about Mangum, I think, stands. Zachary Thornton, though, the counterpoint is historic note. 2016, after a second game, Taysom era was over, bring in Tanner. That was the cry. Isn't this not ironic, as Alanis Morissette might say?
Yeah, but Taysom wasn't coming off of being this, and I'm not trying to pile on here, but Taysom wasn't coming off a season of being part of the worst offense we've ever had. Granted, Tanner didn't play that whole season.
No, I think what Zach is saying here, what Zachary Thornton is saying here, isn't necessarily that, though it's hard to read intention in a tweet. I think what he's saying here is, you know, everybody was so hungry for Mangum to come in. I think he's doing the opposite. I think he's trashing Mangum, not necessarily trashing the fans, though probably a little bit there too, is that Mangum, everybody wanted him to replace Tanner back then. And now we're getting full-on Tanner Mangum, and it's not working, right? So Matt, who would you start at quarterback against Wisconsin?
Tanner Mangum. I wouldn't even flinch.
Who do you think gives us the best chance to win football games in 2018? Tanner Mangum or Zach Wilson?
I'm still with Tanner.
I'm done. I'm out. After watching him, he's got happy feet, which is the worst thing to me for a quarterback. Once they lose their confidence in a collapsing pocket, they're done. That is so hard to get a guy back from that. And he had a little bit of it against Arizona, and every time, I mean, he was seeing ghosts, man. He had clean pockets that he ran out of because he saw something. I mean, he had happy feet. The other piece is this offense is still not good. Better, like I said. I would start him against Arizona. Against Wisconsin. I would start Tanner because it's not going to matter who starts against Wisconsin. We'll get to that here in a second. And then I would give Zach Wilson at least a half, if not the whole game, against McNeese State. That's what I would do. I think Tanner's done. I just don't think this is going to work. If we can't, this running game needs somebody that can throw over the top and complete some long passes. And Tanner, just we've seen now for three seasons, that's not what his game.
But you know, I think part of the issue with the long ball this season is if you look at Micah Simons' stats, okay, and I'm relying here on what BYU Statsman, that's at BYU Statsman on Twitter, has tweeted out.
He is the man.
He does some great statistical work on football that's really just this labor of love that he does on his own. I mean, it's awesome, right? So, but if you look across the line for what he's given us on Micah Simon, okay, Micah Simon's been targeted 9 times. He's caught the ball twice. He's dropped it 4 times. Okay? So, but per reception, he's got 15.5 yards. And now if you look at the depth at which he's being targeted, the target distance is 80, 8 yards, right? I mean, so if you the average is 9.8, which is higher than almost everybody else. Okay, everybody else who's really caught anything. So I think that part of the issue is they're when they're throwing over the top, they seem to be going to Micah Simon a disproportionate amount of the times, and he can't catch it. So you've either got to figure out you've either got to give Mangum another deep target before you really know how bad you've got it. Or you just got to give up on the long ball. There's got to be somebody else who can get back there and catch the ball.
Well, Colley did once, and then he dropped the frickin' ball.
Yep, but hit him in the hands. He did have to fight for that pass a little bit the other night, but it did hit him in the hands. And
he did. I don't know. Did he really have to fight for it? The ball
It wasn't like the first time. But one of the other things, if you look at all these statistics that he's put out, and this goes back to something you said about Tanner standing in the pocket. That's not what he does, and it's never been his strong suit. Right? He's 20 or 27 on plays where we're running play action. It's 74% completion rate. When he's under center, right, and a lot of these plays under center, he ends up rolling out, and they slide in the pocket out. He's throwing it with a 68-69% completion rate. But in these shotgun plays and some of this other stuff, it's much, much lower.
Well, you look at his targets, and you're making a very good point, is right now, I don't know if we have any significant playmakers outside of Bushman. I don't know that we do. Maybe Pututau, Lalu Pututau, because he's looked really good, I think. He's looked really good. So you've got two tight ends that can do something. I don't know if we're back to the same conversation we've had the last two seasons. I don't know if any of these wide receivers can do anything with the ball. Right? Like, they're not creating yards after the catch. They're not necessarily creating great separation, though Colley did on that play, but then he dropped the ball, so it doesn't matter, right? You can create the separation, but if you don't catch it, then it doesn't matter. Simon has created some separation, and he's dropped the ball 4 times. He dropped the ball 6 times last year. Last year, you said 2 receptions on 9 targets. He only caught the ball on his targets 50% of the time, which is not good. Now, that can be on the quarterbacks, too, not just on Simon, right?
But of the 7 this year, of the 7 targets he's not caught, 4 of those were drops.
Right. So he got hit, right? Like, he got the ball.
Something happened, but it was a catch that at least BYU Statsman feels like he had a reasonable shot at catching.
I want to see more Gunnar Romney, right? Because I think we need playmakers out there. And, you know, Squally's a solid running back. I like him. But I think maybe you need a little bit more of Katoa, too, because I think he might have the potential for more big plays, right? Maybe he isn't going to read the holes as well, and maybe it's certainly not as experienced. But, you know, we need big plays, and right now BYU is not getting big plays.
And I'm not trying to be an absolute Tanner Mangum apologist. Don't get me wrong. I think he's
I think
he's a pretty average quarterback.
Okay. You love Tanner Mangum.
But I don't think we can lay all of the woes of this offense at the feet of Tanner Mangum and pretend like if we bring in this untested true freshman, we're going to win 8 games. I'm not there.
I'm not saying that either.
I don't know that Zach Wilson's going to have the right tools around him either to do what we need to do offensively. I agree with you. We've got to have a deep threat. We've got to have big play potential so that people will back off the line of scrimmage and give Squally Canada room to do his thing, give Hefo a little room on the jet sweep, which I now am getting comfortable with, or whatever it is that we're doing. Like, we've got to create some space. And yeah. I don't care if that's these 5 or 10 yard throws, you know, get guys out on the bubble screen or, you know, these little passes out in the flats or whatever it is. You know, but we've got to move the football to open up the running game. And right now, especially last weekend, we just weren't.
According to BYU Statsman, the guys that he's actually targeting beyond 15 yards, it's actually Bushman and Colley. The average distance on his throws to them mm-hmm. is over 15 yards. And quite frankly, those are probably the right guys. The question is, are we getting the right volume, right? Are we getting the right volume to those two guys?
And because Gunnar those two Romney guys combined have the same amount of targets as Micah Simon.
Yes. Yes, they do. And that's a problem. And but combined, see, only have one more target combined than Hifo and Pau do.
Right. And this is exactly the point I'm trying to make, right? I don't think we're throwing it to the right people over the top.
I agree. I think there's some issues there, and that's a combination of coaching and Mangum, right? And making the reads. But obviously Mangum's interceptions were a big issue. So we talked about wide receiver. Johnny Dangerman on Twitter said, "What's the deal with the drop passes?" I don't know. They got to get better on
that. Got to take some air out of the footballs or something.
Got to get better. So, Matt, let's talk about the defense for a second.
You're going to totally ignore my deflated totally football reference.
I don't want to talk about that. I hate that thing. I hate it. It's one of the dumbest things in the history of football, is that stupid scandal that wasn't even a scandal.
Aaron Rodgers does it. Nobody seems to mind.
It's stupid.
No, Aaron Rodgers prefers to overinflate the football.
But that's what I'm saying. There's no scientific basis for any of it. Stop
yes,
it.
There you is. Just, it's science.
It's not science. There's no science.
Take the titles away. It's science.
The Patriots may or may not have broken a rule that doesn't matter.
It is a rule, and it has a punishment. It's like a $15,000 equipment fine.
Great. Give
unless
them a
you're
fine.
Tom Brady.
Unless you're Tom Brady.
Why did we go down this rabbit hole?
I don't know why you went down this rabbit hole. I don't ever want to talk about this because all the people are listening going, I hate the Patriots. They deserved it. You guys are stupid. And I'm like, well, fine. Maybe I am. But if it was your team, you'd feel the exact same way that I do. So anyway, now everybody hates my guts. Thanks, dude. Thanks for making everybody hate my guts.
I'm just glad that I'm on the same page with everybody else.
Yeah, hilarious. Matt, is the defense, going back to Joel's question, is the defense better, worse, or the same as last year?
I think they're the same.
I think they're slightly better. Maybe the same. It's two games. I don't know how good either of these offenses really are. Arizona looked terrible against Houston and Cal. I don't know yet. So they're about the same, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse.
I was super excited after the Arizona game. I was very excited about the defense. But I think it's pretty clear at this point that something's wrong with Khalil Tate. He's hurt. He's otherwise hampered. I don't think this is Sumlin telling him not to run. I don't think it's we're going to try and turn him into a pocket passer. I think something's wrong. So I don't know. I think we did a good job offensively of bottling him up, but I think we were helped by some other factor that we weren't factoring into our evaluation of the Arizona win until we see them again, you know, go out and lay an egg against Houston.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think our issue on defense is, I mean, for example, I'll start with Butch Powell. Okay, we love him, right? That lick he put on him that forced the fumble was the thing of beauty.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Right, except he also gave up an easy touchdown pass in this game because he's not great in coverage. Okay. That to me is most of our defenders. Most of our defenders aren't good enough at everything they need to do. You know what I mean? Like outside of Taki Taki, who's amazing, and I think he's going to be playing on Sundays. Outside of Taki Taki and the defensive line, let's see. Dangerman asked this about this too. Was it just me or did the D-line look very vanilla on Saturday? Four men rushed straight up the field, yielding a pocket that collapsed slowly enough for their QB to do what they needed to do. You and I have talked about this before. I'm not a huge fan of Tuiaki's play calls. I think our defense is very vanilla, right? We have played more man-to-man coverage this year, I think, than we did previously. But we don't do a lot of stuff on defense, right? We just kind of play it straight. And I think if you have exceptional athletes, you can do that, right? I think if you have average athletes compared to your opponents, like maybe we do, I think you've got to do some other stuff, right? Do you disagree or agree with my take on that?
Yeah, I think you've got to. I think your scheme needs to be a little bit more complex and a little bit more tailored to what you're facing, and you've got to adjust things in the second half. And I felt like I saw some of that in the Arizona game. Did not get much of that against Cal.
Well, I think Cal did. We talked about on this podcast. We almost exclusively talk about the BYU side of things, right? I have to give a lot of credit to Cal's coaching staff. You know, they had that one quarterback who was almost exclusively doing the wildcat, and then he started throwing the ball, right? And yep. It worked because we got sucked in, right? I think Cal made some adjustments and did some things that they hadn't done against North Carolina, so it wasn't on film. And I thought they did a good job on both offense and defense scheming. I think they out-coached our coaches a little bit. Maybe not by a lot, but by a little. And that goes back to what we said way at the beginning of this, that you know, the coaching maybe wasn't great in this game, right? As we thought it had been above average against Arizona, right? I will say this. I think the defense will be fine. Like you said, they might be similar to what they were last year, which was not terrible. It was kind of average, maybe a little bit above average, depending on how you measure that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still super worried about the offense and their ability to score points against a defense that's even halfway decent. You know, and that may be an overreaction because California's defense might be better than halfway decent.
But I'll tell you what, that, I've already forgotten his name, number 89, this kid from Cal.
Oh.
Whatever his name was.
Bob.
He was better than any defensive player Arizona had.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And their defensive line created pressure without blitzing. And yes. Arizona could not do that.
And I think
their defensive line was monstrous against the run game. I mean, they were making tackles. Canada couldn't even get to the line of scrimmage before he got hit.
Yeah, I think the line play on both sides of the ball for BYU did not do as well as they did the week before, but I think they were up against superior competition. Now, one thing about the defense that I will say, and I agree with your assessment that this is a vanilla defense, and we are going to struggle, I think, for most of the year to get real pressure on a quarterback. And I don't think our sack total is going to be very high at the end of the season. That being said, if you look at through these two games, our top five tacklers, it's mostly the positions you would want to see. Okay, it is Zane Anderson, Butch Powell, Diane Gunmaloku, Corbin Kapusi, and Sione Takitaki. Those are your top five, right?
And there's some of your best players.
You want those tackles. You want the tackles to be made, the bulk of them, by your defensive linemen and your linebackers. Like, that's the key, right? If your top five leading tacklers include two or three defensive backs, like, you're giving up a lot of yardage, most likely.
Well, and Tuiaki has talked about this. His defensive philosophy is that the defensive line occupies the offensive line to create opportunities for his linebackers. And you mentioned Zane Anderson, Butch Powell, and Takitaki. Those are three linebackers, right? Like, I think the defense is working how Tuiaki wants it to work. I don't know if it's the right way to do the defense. I guess we got spoiled by watching. I know it was Bend Don't Break, but Broncos defenses did more stuff, right? They moved people around more than what Tuiaki does.
You did stuff at the line of scrimmage to confuse the quarterback's reads.
Correct. But to be fair, the other interception was, we got an interception because we created some pressure on the quarterback and the linebacker read the passing lane, right? He was in the right mm-hmm. place. So mm-hmm. so we created two turnovers, but the funny thing to me is, I saw this on Twitter, last week people were whining because the BYU defense didn't create any turnovers, okay? This year, this game, they create two forced turnovers, right? They were forced. It wasn't something weird like a mishandled snap, right? It was a fumble that was definitely forced. Just ask that Cal running back. And pressure on a quarterback and a linebacker being in the right spot, right? This week I saw, those were too easy turnovers, right? And it's like, guys, we can't have it both ways. Like, it can't be one week we're not getting the ball turned over, and the next week it was like it was luck. You know,
we got
like,
them, but these ones don't really count.
Yeah, right? There were great turnovers. You know, one of them turned into a friggin' touchdown, for heaven's sakes. I don't know how much better you can have of a turnover. At one point, the defense was outscoring the offense, which I thought actually the game was going to end with us at 10 points, and the defense would have outscored the offense. You know, but through three quarters it did.
Well, I'll say this about the turnovers. You have to turn turnovers into points.
Yes.
And it's got to be every time. You know, but if you turn the ball, if you have two turnovers in a game that you don't convert, that you convert to 0 points, especially if you turn the ball over and go three and out, that is a killer. That is a win killer.
We've also got to unleash our kicker. You have this weapon, this kid that may have been one of the best kickers in the country coming out of high school. I watched him at halftime. He is booming kicks through the middle of the uprights from 60 yards.
Did you just use the phrase "release the kicker"?
I did.
Or did you say "unleash the kicker"? Either way, know. Like
whatever.
What is this, like the Kraken? Like we're gonna this is our weapon.
I'm just telling you. If you have a really good kicker, you use him.
You are going to win. Wait till you see our kicker.
You don't need to go for it fourth and two. You kick a 50-yard field goal, right? Like, why the heck did we recruit this kid? If he's just going to kick extra
points. So
that we
could run the same play on third and fourth down?
I'm just saying, like, I watched him do this. Now, can he do it in game action? I don't know. But they don't either until they let him do it, right? Because it's not like they do real live field goals in practice. They kind of do, right? But nothing is going to replicate this. They need to give him some opportunities, and we need to find out. Because some game, we're going to need to know how far we can go.
Hashtag free the kicker.
You know? And Southam may be that weapon. So, anyway, let's preview Wisconsin. We've only got a few minutes
Release
left.
Release the kicker!
I'm not going to talk about Wisconsin. Hardly at all. If you want to learn about them, there's articles everywhere. They're awesome. Way better than we are. Okay, done. Ben Staller.
I'm still going to have some fun with this release the kicker line. Can that become a thing for the rest
release
of the season?
Kicker. Sure, sure. Southam's great. I mean, he was booing
Free Southam.
He hit one that was 60 yards at halftime, and it was middle of the uprights, you know, halfway up. At 60, dude. Kicking from beyond the 40.
It sounds amazing. I just.
It's really cool. I love kickers. I know people hate kickers. But a good kicker is a massive weapon. A massive weapon. I mean,
even if he's just a little guy.
Doesn't matter if he's a little guy. The points still count. The 3 points count. And the 3 points would have been the difference on Saturday night, correct?
And Southam's not real little. I mean, it is 6 foot, which is, you know, he dwarfs
kicker.
Me.
He's tiny.
Right?
He's tiny. But it's okay. I'm not asking him to make a big tackle. I'm asking him to kick the football. Ben Staller on Facebook says, how can I convince a Wisconsin tailgater to give me a free brat? I think that may be the highlight of my game day experience this weekend. Ben, it's easy.
It's not hard.
Just ask.
It's not. Actually, if you do it right, you don't even need to ask. Like, if you walk down whatever street it was that we walked down in Camp Randall when we were there, how many people invited us to join them in their tailgate and have a beer and a brat?
At least half a dozen.
And I really didn't get the feeling. Like, I've been to away games for BYU where people are like, hey, do you want to have a beer? And they're doing it to poke fun at you because you don't drink or whatever. But these guys were like genuinely trying to just be nice.
Oh, yeah. That's Wisconsin for you. I mean, that's the Badger fans. So
you just got to walk through, just find wherever, like the adult fans. I don't know about the students. Whatever.
We didn't cross a lot of students.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't have a frame of reference for it. But we walked through where there were like groups of adult people tailgating. And I think it wasn't 100% of them offered us something to eat, but it felt like a high number. It was uncomfortably high.
You can get it uncomfortably. Why was it uncomfortable?
It was like in that movie Funny Farm, where like the whole town gets in on trying to help them sell the house, and they're being like over the top nice, and it's like suspicious.
Did you just make a Funny Farm reference?
I did. It's a great Chevy Chase film. It's a great film. Starring Chevy Chase.
It's not a great film. It's an okay film.
One of the great comedians of our time.
I love Chevy Chase. Don't misunderstand that. It's not one of his best, you know.
I don't know. It's pretty good.
It's not Fletch.
That's not a bridge. That's termites holding hands. That's a great line.
That is a really good line. I had forgotten that line.
They got the payphone in the house. So they got all the quarters. That's a funny movie.
So the line on this game is Wisconsin by 22. Are you taking the Badgers or the Cougars in that?
By 22.
Taking the Badgers.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the Badgers. It doesn't match up with what I was predicting as a score, but I think you take the Badgers there.
Over under 44.5. I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I'm taking the over there.
Total yards for BYU, can they break against Cal, Matt? They had total, where's the total yards? 287. Can they break 275?
Nope.
I'm going to say yes, but it's going to be garbage yards. Total yards for Wisconsin, they're averaging like 500. So let's say 480.
Yep.
I say you are correct. Let's see. Passing yards for Tanner, can he break 120?
No.
I will agree with you. Rushing yards for Canada, can he break 70? I'll say yes.
Yeah.
Turnovers for BYU, how many times does BYU turn the ball over?
Twice.
I say three times. Turnovers for Wisconsin, one.
Zero.
Zero. Okay, that's fine. Final call, Matt, I'm going to say 38-14.
Oh, stop it. Are you serious?
Is that your call?
That was it. That was my call.
So
I was going to say 35-14, then when I decided to go with the spread of the 22-point spread, so I bumped them up by a field goal.
I think we do a little better than we did against them last year. But we're measuring by, you know, inches here.
What is it, right? Like, this is kind of what we're saying. The defense is about the same. You're thinking the defense might be a little bit better. I think the offense is a little bit better than they were last year, but not by leaps and bounds. So you're basically, it's basically the same team.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. This is boring. Rest of the season, though, is not as boring. So Matt, McNeese State, where you're still saying a win, right? I'm saying away.
I'm still comfortable with McNeese State.
Okay, Washington, they're about the same team we thought they were so far this year. I think we're both a loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Utah State's where it gets a little interesting, Matt. They are, I think people are exaggerating a little bit because they, almost were beat with Michigan State, which they didn't almost beat Michigan State, but it was a close game. I still think BYU wins that in Provo. What do you call it?
They hung 60 points up on New Mexico State.
Who the freak cares? We're gonna put 50 against New Mexico State.
Independent conference rival.
So what's your call? You were just stalling. That's my thing.
Stalling. You think I'm stalling? I don't know what to do with this game. I'm gonna call it a loss.
All right. You're a waffler. Hawaii is much better than last year. They're still terrible. We win.
Yeah, Hawaii doesn't make me as nervous.
All right. Northern Illinois is not looking good. We win. You?
Yep. I got to win with Northern Illinois.
Boise State, even better than we thought. And I think honestly, they are they could be a top 15 team. We lose.
Yeah, I think that was the game I switched on last week, right?
No, you've been calling them to lose forever.
Oh, so, okay.
The game you switched on last week was Cal.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was the game you switched on last week. Good call, buddy. Way to jinx us. UMass, maybe a little better than last year. No, actually they're not. They're terrible. That's a win.
It better be a win.
Better be a win. New Mexico State, I'm going to give us a win. Mm-hmm. How about you? And then I think we lose against Utah.
Yep.
So I have us beating Utah State and being 7-5. You have us losing to Utah State. Otherwise, we're the same and being 6-6 and making a bowl. Matt, I think this is what the season is. We're somewhere between 5-7 and 7-5. And Utah State's going to be closer than any of us would like it to be. Hawaii might be a little closer than we would want it to be. I'd be worried if this game were on the road because they seem to be an improved team. Still not great, but improved. And then, you know, this season, if it's going to be better than that, that means you have to beat Boise State or Utah, right? Who are both looking to be very good teams. You know, Utah is probably a top 30, 35 team, and Boise looks like a top 15 team. And you know, with the way we're playing right now, I don't see any indication we can beat either of those teams on the road. I haven't seen anything, even the Arizona game, that makes me believe that.
No, I think like the thing you worry about, that I worry about at this point, is losing one of these games that you really, really shouldn't. Right? Well, those Northern Illinois, UMass, or New Mexico State.
New Mexico State is worse than most FCS teams. I'm not worried about New Mexico State. But I agree with you on, and I'm not really worried about UMass. The Hawaii game is the one that
beat us a year ago.
They beat us a year ago.
We're not.
They're worse. We're better than we were. We just established this.
Yeah, we're not. But
better
than
we
were
last year.
Leaps and bounds better than we were.
We barely lost to
them. I think we're beatable in that game.
Not by UMass. I don't think we're beatable. To me, the question is, if Northern Illinois can look more like they did last year and Hawaii, but they're both at home, which makes me feel a little bit better, right?
That trip to Hawaii is tough.
You know, but again, I think we're 5-7 to 7-5, which is exactly what you and I said at the beginning of this year, right? So
yeah.
That's why I think we're overreacting to Cal. We got a split out of these first two games, which is what we all hoped we could get, right? And you know, and none of us thought we had a chance against Wisconsin or Washington.
And if you look back to the discussion we had last week, I think what I did is I added the Arizona win where I had predicted them to lose, and I gave us a win against another team later in the schedule, right? But, you know, that's really not a huge split from where we were before.
No, and I once had us in the preseason, I had us at 8-4, right?
That's just crazy talk.
You had an 8-4 last week, you ninny. So stop that.
I had a win. It looked so promising. And you know, and the thing is whatever.
That's the thing. The Utah State game is no given, right? Utah State, no. Maybe Hawaii. You say UMass. I don't agree, but that's
Northern
fine.
Illinois more so than UMass, in my opinion. I'll give you that.
But yeah, Northern Illinois is just a way better team than UMass. I get that it's in Provo, but they are substantially, both historically last year and this season, are just a better team, right? So to me, Northern Illinois, maybe Hawaii, maybe Utah State, that stretch of three games, if you can win those three games, you're going bowling, right? And this season is better than last season, right? If you can win those three games. So you beat McNeese State, you lose to Washington, you're 2-3. If you win those three games, you're 5-3. And all you have to do is win one more to go bowling. I think this is doable. That's why when people are like, this is last year all over again, it's not last year. We didn't have a single win against a team in the top 75, and Arizona's probably a top 75 team, maybe a little worse than that. We didn't have one. So we're already winning. Hashtag winning. I mean, again, I get it. It's not great, but it's all we wanted was an improvement over last year, right?
I think if you get to a bowl game, that's really what everybody wanted out of this year.
Yes.
Let's get to a bowl game.
Yes. And if you get to a bowl game, you played a tougher schedule than you did last year, what it's looking like, based on how all the teams are performing to date. You'll have played a tougher schedule than you played last year.
There you go. I mean, that's improvement. You're not going to go from a 4-win season to a 10-win season in
one
year.
Not typically, especially when, again, this schedule isn't like the hardest schedule ever, but it's for BYU, it's harder than average, historically speaking.
Oh, sure.
So, Matt, we will be doing a halftime show again, and I won't be at the Wisconsin game. I wanted to do it with you, but we were sitting in the north end zone right not too far from the Jumbotron, and it was so loud. Like, I've not been to Lavelle Edwards Stadium in 16 years, and it was awesome until, of course, we started losing. But the whole game day experience was a lot of fun. We need to do a game here in the next couple of years where we go to Provo. We need to do that.
Yeah, that's what we need to start thinking about.
We need to start thinking about that. I don't know. What's next year look like?
Let's look and see. Who do we have at home next year?
2019. I can't find it.
All right, here we go. 2019 at home. You have Utah. Well, this it's a smorgasbord of choices. Utah, USC, Washington, Boise State, Liberty, Idaho State. I think we're going in September.
Idaho State. I want to see a win. I don't know. Who would you want to see? USC?
I think I've seen USC. Maybe Washington? They go to the Utah game to open up the season? I don't know. There's some good choices in there.
Yeah.
2020's got some winners, too. Michigan State, Utah State, Missouri, Houston, San Diego State. Yes!
Oh, my gosh. Maybe we should do that. What date is that one?
San Diego State's the 14th of November. But then football powerhouse, North Alabama. I'd love to see North Alabama.
Yes, very good, sir. All right. Well, Matt, anything else you want to say to the listeners before we sign off? We'll be there, facebook.com/riseandshout for our halftime show. And, of course, we'll be back next week to talk about whatever happens in this game against Wisconsin. Percent chance Zach Wilson plays?
12%.
I was going to say like 7. So I think he could. I mean, injury, obviously, it's 100 if he get. But
I think once you're down by 3 or 4 scores...
Well, I thought we might see him in the fourth quarter against Cal, but it's still, to your point, as you said, we were never really completely out of it, right?
Right.
So, you know, and, but I mean, percent chance Mangum plays, that Wilson plays meaningful minutes this year.
This year?
Yeah.
I think he'll play 40? Meaningful minutes at some point.
40%? Probably. I mean, unless Mangum starts just tearing it up. You know, I think it's there. So, Matt, any parting words for the listeners?
Yeah, who was it that asked us about wearing BYU gear to work?
Johnny
who was
Ashton.
That tweet back question? Johnny Ashton. Okay, so here's what I'd like to do. While we've been talking here, I took a little gander at the BYU store website.
Of course you did.
And I'm going to crowdsource my choice of BYU socks.
You're going to tweet it out?
So I guess I'll tweet. Maybe I need to tweet it out. Or we can tweet it from the BYU Rise Shout account.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
And we will take suggestions on which BYU socks available. Well, if you can find something cooler or different on Amazon than what they sell in the BYU store, I will take I'm going to purchase the socks that have the most. I don't know. You can't do it as a poll, but whatever socks get the most attention in that conversation. But then you got to pick like 6 pairs of socks and let everybody vote. But maybe what if somebody finds some socks that aren't
there? Pick 4 pairs of socks. Who cares what they find? Well, I guess you could. Just crowdsource it, and then we can do a poll.
That feels like a lot of steps. I'm just going to choose 4 or 5. I'll choose 4, and we're going to vote on them. And if somebody throws in a, hey, wait a minute, Mangum, you probably need to look this pair up on Amazon, maybe I end up with 2 pairs of BYU socks.
Because you're a waffler.
That doesn't sound like a bad option.
You're a waffler, so everybody should be used to this.
Waffles.
Syrup. Butter. All right, well, thank you, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. You can follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and don't forget the halftime show against Wisconsin. Thank you again for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!